It's a pleasure to introduce Stephen Holley today. I'm going to read his bio real quick. Stephen graduated from Lake Highlands High School in 1996, and he attended the Naval Academy, where he was a quarterback, and he also played running back. Stephen graduated from the Naval Academy in 2000 and completed BUDS training in 2001. Stephen deployed four times with SEAL Team 5 and SEAL Team 7. He had two deployments in Southeast Asia and two deployments in Iraq. After active duty, Stephen returned to Dallas, where he accepted a position as an office tenant rep broker with Staubach Company. And he left there in 2015 to start Holley & Company Real Estate and Six Sight Gear, which is a performance and outdoor apparel company. Stephen is the co-founder of Carry the Load, a Dallas-based nonprofit whose mission is to restore the true meaning of Memorial Day. He currently resides in Lake Highlands with his wife, Molly, and his five children. Stephen Holley, everybody.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. You know, Daryl and Kyle, thank you for the invitation. I'm going to give you a little bit of background on my experience, primarily in the SEAL community, and some experiences that happened there and how that has shaped me, and then talk to you a little bit about Carry the Load this morning. As Kyle indicated, grew up here in Dallas, went to the Naval Academy and graduated there in 2000, was lucky enough to get a spot to go to what's called Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training in October of 2000. And for those of you who don't know much about BUDS or SEAL training, that's about seven to eight months long, divided into three phases. The first phase being essentially where they're testing your mettle to see how bad you want to be there. You're spending about 16 hours a day. You're running, you're swimming, you're doing obstacle courses, you're in and out of the Pacific Ocean. And it's really, you know, people think about SEAL training, they think about, you know, obviously the physical part of it. But the point of that training is to see what you got between your ears. And they just use your body to get to your mind. And so first phase, we started with about 120 guys a few weeks in the first phase. Before we started Hell Week, we were down to about 39. And Hell Week is during first phase, and Hell Week's the week where you start on Sunday, and you know you're going to go till sometime on Friday or Saturday, depending upon when they secure Hell Week. And so it was during Hell Week that I learned, that I witnessed, and I learned one of the most valuable lessons I'll ever learn, and we started Hell Week on Sunday, and again, you're going 24 hours a day. The Navy has studied it, and they estimate that you burn about anywhere from 12 to 14,000 calories a day based on your physical exertion. And you obviously you can't keep up with that caloric deficit, but you're getting to eat, but you're not sleeping, and you know you're not going to sleep for 5.5 days. So, in and out of the Pacific Ocean, we were there. We were doing this in the first week of December, and the water first week in December in the ocean is, you know, mid-50s maybe. I mean, it's very cold. And so you can imagine in and out of the water. What I always tell people is constantly cold, wet, tired, in and out of the water, in and out of that sand, and what that does to your body from a physical perspective. But if you could imagine running around for a week straight covered in sand and being wet, just the chafing and the sores and the soreness, not only what it does to you physically, but what it does to you mentally. And it was after 2.5 days in Hell Week where on a pain scale, I was pegged at a 9.999. Didn't know if I knew I wasn't going to quit, but I did not know if my body physically could keep going. And that's the point of that training, is to get you to a point where all you got left to do is just keep putting one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. And BUDS is in first phase specifically, everything you're doing is you're doing within a boat crew. 6 to 8 guys carrying one of those rubber dinghies around on your head. And for me, as an officer, I was in charge of a boat crew of about 7 guys. And it was on Tuesday night, about 48 hours into Hell Week, where, again, I was pegged mentally, physically, emotionally. And there was a guy in my boat crew whose name was Jeff Boss. And Jeff had grown up in Ohio, had played football in college, enlisted guy, just physical stud. And Jeff was a guy, for me, selfishly, that when it got really bad for me, I started leaning on Jeff, and likewise, when it got bad for him, he would lean on me, both emotionally and physically. When you get to a point where you're starting to fail, Jeff would pick up my slack, and you know, the highs and lows, I would pick up his slack. And it was on Tuesday, it was Tuesday night, and I got to a point physically where I didn't know how much more I had in me, and started leaning on Jeff pretty heavily. But figured out very quickly that something was really, really wrong with Jeff. And he wasn't talking about it, but he wasn't performing at the level that he had been. And again, human reaction, my first reaction was, if Jeff isn't able to make this, I don't know how I'm going to be able to make this. But it was that Tuesday night where I mentally made the decision that, okay, despite everything that I'm going through, and again, selfish motivation, but I got to make sure Jeff can get through this so that I can get through this. And I started pouring everything I had into Jeff Boss. And throughout the boat crew, everybody started pouring everything they had into Jeff Boss. And what I learned and what I figured out in that situation was, in the midst of the lowest low that I've ever had, when I quit worrying about myself and started worrying about Jeff and pouring everything I had into him, mentally, physically, emotionally, my pain subsided to a level that I could deal with it. And not only could I deal with it, but was able to pick myself back up. What I later learned on Thursday, and again, Jeff kept going, and we got Jeff to Thursday. But what we learned on Thursday was, on Tuesday, Jeff had snapped the fibula in his leg and had gone for 2 days on a broken leg because he didn't want to let us down. And so, for me, the lesson, not only there in Hell Week, but in SEAL training, but in life, but in my marriage, was that when I quit worrying about the problems that I'm dealing with and can pour into others around me, everything that I'm dealing with or going through makes it a lot easier. And again, that's something that Jeff taught me, and that training taught me was, no matter where you are, how low you are, that if you quit worrying about yourself and start pouring into others, good things will happen. We finished up Hell Week. We finished up first phase, and we had about 19 guys. Second phase, you're learning how to dive, both open circuit and closed circuit, what you see in the films and what you see in the documentary. And it's about 10 weeks long, and you're just essentially learning how to drive a compass underwater and navigate in and out of harbors and piers, and learning how to put mines on ships. Third phase is another 10 weeks. And third phase for me, when you think about being a Navy SEAL, third phase, having grown up here in Texas in the outdoors and hunting and fishing and running around, third phase for me was where I finally, I think, found my stride, because you're shooting everything under the sun, learning small arms, demolition, small unit tactics, And the term we used to use in the teams was learning how to shoot, move, and communicate. And so we ended up graduating. We got some rollbacks. We ended up graduating about 25 guys in my buds class and went straight from there out to Fort Benning, Georgia, and went through static line jump school in June of 01, and then came back to San Diego for advanced training. It was while we were in advanced training that 9/11 happened. And we ended up completing advanced training and got to SEAL Team 5 November 1st, 2001. And when I showed up at SEAL Team 5, it was a ghost town. Everyone had been pre-positioned and forward deployed, awaiting how we were going to respond to the events of that day. Subsequently thereafter, my first two deployments, we went to, with SEAL Team 5, we went to Southeast Asia. And in Southeast Asia, we were fighting a group called the Abu Sayyaf group, which is an Al-Qaeda affiliate in Southeast Asia. And again, going after primarily high-value targets that use that Philippine island chain as a safe haven. And subsequently did those two deployments. Came back in 04 and ended up deploying to Iraq for the first time. And if you can think back to Iraq in 2004, the word insurgency wasn't being used yet. We thought at the time we were fighting what we were terming former regime elements of the Ba'ath Party, FRE. And while we knew we were fighting former regime elements of the FRE, we also knew that there was a capability that was there that we couldn't quite put our finger on yet that was a lot more sophisticated than what those former regime elements were capable of. And so 2004 was essentially spent chasing high-value targets. I don't know if you remember the deck of cards in the most high value targets, each were associated with a card on the deck, and we were doing a lot of sniper missions, we were doing a lot of direct action missions, and it was in 04 in Najaf, which was in the southern part of Iraq. And what you have to remember about Iraq and Special Operations Forces, both Navy and Army, don't own any real estate. We come in and out of real estate, and real estate is actually owned by conventional forces, whether it's the Marine Corps, the Army. In the southern part of Iraq at that time, it was a lot of coalition forces with the Spaniards, the El Salvadorians, and so as we were going through missions, there was a lot of coordination that had to happen in order for us to operate effectively. And so it was in 2004 when we got tasked with a mission to go. I don't know if the name Muqtada al-Sadr rings any bell, but he was and he still is a Shiite cleric in the country of Iraq, who held a lot of, he had his own army, held a lot of sway politically, and sometimes that army would be hostile, sometimes that army would not be hostile, and so the government at the time was trying to figure out how to deal with Muqtada al-Sadr, and it turned out that our task unit was tasked with going down, and as opposed to snatching Sadr, it was decided that we were going to snatch his number two, just kind of as a test case to see what would happen. And so we planned the mission and essentially had an assault force that had to leave from Baghdad, go down to Najaf, find his number two and snatch him. And I was tasked with going down with all the pre-coordination with an Army Special Forces group that was living down in Najaf. And went down there, got all the logistics planned, ended up having to coordinate getting a helicopter and our assault force coming into an El Salvadorian base. And the tricky part of that was I couldn't tell the El Salvadorians who we were getting or why we were getting them. But got all of the necessary permissions in place, and we launched our assault force from Baghdad, and they were coming down. And it was in the midst of them being launched that the El Salvadorian colonel came to me, and he said, essentially, we're not going to allow you to use our base tonight. And so for me, with an assault force that had already launched, I went to the ODA, the Army Special Forces Senior Enlisted, and said, hey, we're high and dry here if this guy doesn't let us come. And so that ODA SF Senior Enlisted, essentially we went back and forth about our options, and it was the El Salvadorians essentially didn't want to let us land there because of the repercussions of a helicopter landing in their base once we grabbed this very high value target, and the political ramifications and the blowback from a reactionary perspective from the Mahdi Army and Sadr's militia. And so we were sitting there that night, not knowing what to do, and a helicopter, a Spaniard, ended up getting shot that night. A medevac helicopter ended up landing anyway, and the Army ODA SF came to me and he said, here's our opportunity. So we went in and we talked to the colonel, and he laid it out to the colonel that whether the SEAL helicopter or the Spaniard helicopter lands here tonight, which had already happened, you guys are going to take the brunt of this reaction anyway. And it was an Army senior enlisted that I'd spent about 6 hours with. I didn't know the man. He was in charge of six guys that were living in that town all on their own that were going to face the ramifications of our mission as well. And he went in there and together pleaded our case and was able to convince the colonel from the El Salvadorian force that we needed to use the base. And the ramifications of that the next day, I didn't know it at the time, but the southern part of Iraq, once we snatched that guy that evening, completely blew up, and the Mahdi Army attacked every base down there. And those six guys, with the ODA senior enlisted being in charge of them, were in the thick of it for several days to come. And for me, thinking back on that, it was a decision that he made that was it was the right decision. It was the tough decision. But it was a guy putting his life on the line for me that I didn't know, and for our men that he didn't know. And for me, it's something that I'll never ever forget. I ended up doing another deployment in Iraq in 2005, and it was during that deployment that I called home about 3 weeks into it and figured out that my wife was pregnant with our first. And for me, being a SEAL and operating with those guys in that level of camaraderie, in that level of teamwork, in that level of clarity and focus and purpose that we had there, made a very difficult decision to get out of the Navy. Ended up completing that deployment in 05, got out, and came back here to raise a family. And for me, part of that decision was I've served, and it's time to turn the page. And for me, it was time to go be a civilian and go and start making money and providing for a family. And was lucky enough to have an opportunity at the Staubach Company at the time, now JLL, and was able to work in an organization with phenomenal people But had a lot of counsel coming out of the Navy saying you better be careful with your transition, and so being 10 feet tall and bulletproof at the time, I didn't understand or didn't want to understand what people were trying to warn me about, and so that transition, which is still ongoing, has been difficult at times. It's been some days are a lot easier than others, but what I figured out through that transition, and where initially it was about going to work, commercial real estate, going to make a bunch of money, and for me a bunch of money was X amount, and when I hit X amount, the issues that I was dealing with and sometimes continue to deal with, they didn't go away. And so for me, the rationale was, okay, it's not X amount of money, it's X plus Y amount of money. And again, when we hit X plus Y amount of money, those issues didn't go away. And it wasn't until I was able to realize that for me, the lack of the sense of purpose that I lost coming out of the SEAL teams and having served our country, that void couldn't be filled by just a vocation and a career. And it wasn't until 2011 when another fellow SEAL who lives here in Dallas, Clint Bruce, and I started an organization called Carry the Load, where I was able to start to fill some of that void and that sense of purpose. And for those of you who don't know, Carry the Load is an organization that we started here, and we essentially wanted to do three things. We wanted to restore the meaning of Memorial Day, and again, in 2011, it came on the heels of losing some very good friends of ours. And going through Memorial Day weekend, where, at least for my generation, it was about having a barbecue, it was about going to the lake, it was about getting out of town. There was very limited, if any, interaction I had with people my age that knew what Memorial Day was really about. And so, again, Carry the Load initially came out of a lot of anger and a lot of frustration, but we tried to do three things. We wanted to set up an organization that could restore the meaning of Memorial Day. We wanted to raise money for nonprofits that were serving not only military and veteran families, law enforcement, fire and rescue families as well. And the third thing we wanted to do was build a template for an organization that we could take and give out to other cities across the country so that they could have a platform with which to raise money for those constituents in their communities as well. And again, for two knucklehead SEALs with zero nonprofit experience that started something in 2011, here we are over 5 years later, and this year we'll be in about 30 to 35 cities on Memorial Day weekend. We will have two relays, one on the West Coast that will start in Seattle and come to Dallas. We've got another East Coast relay that starts in upstate New York and will come to Dallas and culminating in our event here. But for me, the lesson I learned there is that my pain, and again, going back to the reference in Hell Week and the pain that I felt, my pain didn't start to subside until I had an outlet with which to pour my pain into someone else's pain and continuing to serve those constituents in a way where we could raise money and have a meaningful impact upon their lives. For me, again, I still struggle with. A lot of these experiences and trying to make sense of this transition. But for me, came to a point last January where from an emotional, a physical, and most importantly a spiritual perspective, where I finally had to raise my hand and say I needed some help, and that was from a faith perspective, and that was from a mental perspective. But for me, and again, speaking to a group of very successful men, it's not always easy to say this. I've grown more in the past year having raised my hand and asked for help, and having taken the steps to surround myself with people that can give me that help. And again, from a spiritual and emotional perspective. I know I've been all over the map a little bit here this morning, but I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and I'm able to answer any questions that you have. Yes, sir. We've Carry the Load has programs throughout the month of May, with our biggest event being here in Dallas. And our event here in Dallas is a 20-hour event that takes place at Rivershawn Park and the Katy Trail. And it's just a walk. And it's an opportunity for families to come out and to have a meaningful experience on Memorial Day. And the magic of Carry the Load that we stumbled into that we never could have anticipated, again, we started Carry the Load for us, for a veteran order, you know, for veterans, who, if you look at statistically, 1% of the population has served post 9/11. So we started it for the 1% of us. What we never anticipated was the reaction from the 99% that haven't served, but haven't had an overriding passion to have Memorial Day mean something. And so it's a family-friendly event where people come out and walk for as little or as long as you walk. And the magic of the event, again, not planned, was the fellowship and the interaction between the 1% and the 99%. Because whether you're in either category, everybody's carrying something and dealing with something in their life. And that fellowship and that interaction and the community there has fueled our growth across the country. And to date, I think we've raised about a little over $6 million in 5 years. And from a nonprofit metric perspective, we're at a 95% at a 95% that goes back to our programs and our nonprofit partners. And 5% of that over the last 5 years has been towards, you know, what the nonprofit community terms administrative expenses. That answer your question? Yes. The first year for Carry the Load, again, coming on some anger, we planned this 20-hour event where we're going to go out there and punish ourselves. And again, for us, physical pain is emotional purge. And so we needed a time limit with which we could go out there and really hammer ourselves to exercise a lot of the frustration that we felt around the lack of observation for that holiday. And so, yeah, that first year, I think I ran about 60 miles with weight on my back. And every year since then, again, our event here in Dallas is 20 hours, but every year since then, and seeing the growth of Carry the Load and the 99% learning that they really do care, that amount of weight and that amount of distance that I feel compelled to do every year decreases as some of that anger and frustration wanes. Yes, Chris. Great question. Pre-9/11, the interest in the Naval Academy initially came about the opportunity to play football. And those coaches reached out, and my first reaction was, there's no way I'm going to go to a military academy. It candidly was my first reaction. But I went up there, and I visited that campus. And for an 18-year-old, I went, and I had a very powerful experience and literally thought, from an opportunity perspective, again, not knowing 9/11 was on the horizon, but from the opportunity to come out of there, that institution as a 22-year-old, and to go have the opportunity and the responsibility to lead men and women, not knowing I was going in the SEAL community at the time, and the level of training and responsibility that you get at that institution, for me, over the course of a weekend, I thought there's, not to mention the fact it was a free education, this is the best thing I could ever do for myself, both over the next 10 years and long term. And so that was the initial calculus on how that decision came about. And it was through exposure to some other SEALs while I was at the academy. And having the time to spend with them out in San Diego and learning about what they did day to day and having just that common bond of growing up hunting and fishing and running around and knowing I wanted to carry a firearm for a living was what fueled that. It was interesting when we were in advanced training and we watched the Twin Towers come down, and we'd been training for almost a year at that point. It got real all of a sudden, but for me, it got real, but it was also extremely, it got extremely exciting because we knew all the training that we'd been through and all the training that we would be going through. There was a very clear sense of focus on who we were going to be going after we got out of that training. So, it was a combination of people in my life here and then people that I met while I was at the academy as well. Kyle. You know, given that it's a 20-hour event here in Dallas, there's tons of volunteer opportunities, both leading up to and day of. I would tell you that, especially if you've got family and kids, and being a father of five, again, the greatest unintended consequences that I've seen out of carry the load is an opportunity with my oldest being 10, who year one of carry the load being five, he didn't get it. But over subsequent years, to see the pictures that dad was carrying on his pack or on his weight vest, and to start to get the questions from a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old around all these people and who are these people that you're carrying, and starting to put two and two together about remembering and celebrating the service and sacrifice, to raise my kids and hopefully a next generation that doesn't screw it up the way our generation did from an observation perspective. All that to say is it's a phenomenal opportunity to come bring your kids in a very family-friendly environment to get exposed to what that holiday is all about. And again, going back to my earlier comment about the 1% and the 99% and that fellowship and that interaction, it happens at those younger ages as well. So I would tell you participation is coming out and trying it and participating would be the greatest thing you could do. Yes.
So you've got currently two companies.
Yes.
Can you speak a little bit about work-life balance, what you mean? Maybe it's compartmentalizing it or it's,
yeah.
You,
You know what? Work-life balance for me was always something that, from a compartmentalization perspective, I thought I was pretty good at. But again, starting two companies and continuing to serve on executive board of a nonprofit and pour, from a volunteer perspective, a lot of hours into that, not only here in Dallas but across the country, and the wife and five kids. It is the last 12 months has been extremely challenging from that perspective. But what I continually tell myself, and again, there's some vulnerability here to say this in front of this group. But as long as this relationship is working, and as long as my wife and I's relationship is working, and as long as the relationship with my kids is where it should be, that's always got to be the priority, and the rest of it, sink or swim, doesn't matter. And so that's where I continually try to hold myself. But, you know, as we all know, that work-life balance is in a city like Dallas, Texas, in competitive careers, that's the toughest thing we've got to juggle. Daryl. So, recently launched a company called Six Sight, which is a performance hunting apparel line of clothing. And Six Sight was born out of an experience in the SEAL teams where most guys, from a clothing and gear perspective, know how to run a sewing machine, and we're altering both clothing and gear based on what I call tactical functionality. And so being a very avid hunter, when I got out of the Navy, there was functionality that didn't exist in the hunting clothes I was buying off the shelf. And a lot of that was based on the fact that I'm right-handed and I love to bow hunt, and I want my binoculars in a certain place, and I want a rangefinder in a certain place. And I was adding functionality to off-the-shelf hunting clothing, and that idea became the catalyst behind Six Sight. And to fill a gap in the market with what I call tactical functionality from a hunting perspective. And again, flip the switch on the website here at the beginning of January, and am working through all the manufacturing. And for me, having served, it was very, very important for me to figure out, albeit it's been extremely difficult, but I figured out how to build this line of apparel here domestically with a partner up in Spokane, Washington. So, you know, like some of the other things I've done in the past, it was jumping into deep water in a very challenging situation, but figuring out how to make that happen. And very excited that we've finally been able to launch and that we'll have product here midsummer. Yes.
Be interested in your perspective on how your military experience affected your parenting style and maybe the successes that you've been able to have military experience.
Military experience into parenting. Golly, that's a good one. I think I think it comes back to keeping a level head. Obviously, with five kids and the chaos that can bring at times, you know, especially at the end of a long day, you walk in and you know you get what I call controlled chaos, blessed chaos. But the ability to keep a level head and to not act out of emotion and to kind of remove yourself and let those emotions run their course before, whether it's discipline or interaction or engagement, whether that's with my kids or my wife as well. I tell you that would be the biggest thing that I've taken away from that military experience, just in the midst of situations where things seem to be crumbling around you, relying on the guys to the right and the left. And for me in marriage, it's relying on a spouse who is a bigger part of this as anything. So I don't know if that answers your question. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Every CEO that I've met has got a very strong faith. I guess my question is, being down to 19 guys and buds, you guys are relying on each other, obviously, but how prevalent is Christianity and faith going through those times, missions and buds?
For me, it was fundamental. And again, I would put more on operating overseas and going into situations where you didn't know how it was going to turn out. But everybody found something with which to keep them focused and the clarity and the state of mind that no matter what happened, you were going to keep going ahead. For me, from a Christian perspective and from a faith perspective, I knew if I died where I was going, and there was obviously a level of comfort there. I'll tell you, there were some guys that were very spiritual and active in their faith, and obviously that was that community was huge. But there were others that dealt with those risks and uncertainties in other ways that, looking back, with the benefit of hindsight, not all of that was healthy or productive. But again, it's the way some guys dealt with it. But at the end of the day, you had to deal with it one way or the other. You couldn't let any doubt or any second guessing happen in the midst of those situations, or you lost your ability to operate effectively. I mean, you just had to react. And again, getting yourself to a place and a state of mind prior to that was fundamental in being able to just react in those types of situations. Yes, sir. Yes.
What do they do? Because I know that if you don't make it again, you got to start up. How do they handle the situation?
He got rolled back to day one, phase one. And we the irony of the situation, we were trying to get him through to Friday, literally doing everything we could, but it just got to a point where the instructors noticed what was going on, went and X-rayed him, and. And again, the doc called it. Yeah, I had a broken leg. And so he went back day one, phase one, and started all over again. And Jeff Boss went on to become one of the most decorated SEALs that I know. And all of the missions that you've read about in the last 5 or 6 years at that tier one unit, Jeff was involved in, and here very, very recently he's gotten out of the Navy. But again, complete stud, and someone who showed me what mental and physical strength was really all about.
He had dropped at the end of Thursday, so you were able to go another 24 hours?
Yeah, our from Tuesday night to Friday, Jeff was the only guy we lost, and it was just due to injury. From Sunday to Tuesday, we lost half our class, and it was due to guys raising their hand to quit. So it was, once you get to that point where it can't get any worse, or you don't think it can get any worse from a pain perspective, again, it was just putting one foot in front of the other and leaning on the guys to the right and left of you to get through it. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity this morning.